Thanks for that. That was a really nice lead-in, Daniel. I'll be able to spend a little bit more time on some of the other slides. Today, I'm going to talk more about our mediations and our two groups of workers. So it'll be a little more focused than what Daniel spoke about. So we have two categories of outreach workers at Ceasefire. We have outreach workers, street outreach workers, and we have violence interrupters. They both work in high-risk conflict mediation to stop shootings and killings. So today I'm going to focus on the types of conflicts that they mediate and the different professional responsibilities that are associated with each type of worker. First, I'm going to give a brief description of Ceasefire, very brief, given the background we've already gotten this afternoon, and the responsibilities of outreach workers and violence interrupters. Then I'm going to review the data from the Chicago Project, which we've collected using a conflict mediation form with our workers over the course of the last 3 years, so from 2004 through 2006, and I'm going to identify trends and potential hypotheses for the latter. And then we're going to take a brief look at data from this year so far, and then lastly, I'm going to discuss the implications of these findings with respect to mediating conflicts among the highest risk and the professionalization of outreach worker roles and responsibilities. So this is just to touch on what was already covered. You can see here under the interveners that these are the five core components of Ceasefire. Now, I'm actually the National Partnership and Technical Assistance Coordinator, so I'm working with all of our national sites. And I think what Daniel kind of highlighted is there are a lot of groups that have been doing violence prevention in the field for many years, and a lot of times they resent us because they feel like they've already been doing the work. So that's one of the challenges that we have working on the community level. But I think what's really important about our work, which isn't shown up here, is that we have 8 critical elements. So those elements are kind of how we organize and operationalize these components, and those include the right workers with the right skills, the right participants, which are our clients, the right community, the right partners, the right approach, the right relationship with law enforcement, right messages and messengers, and the right measures of effectiveness and accountability. And of course, a broader discussion of those is outside of the scope of this afternoon's conversation. But central to this approach is that is the intervention in and the interruption of conflict. So we look to intervene in conflicts, and then we look to provide positive alternatives to that, whether it is just duking it out, and usually we find the guys are too out of shape and they quit pretty quickly. Or, you know, if somebody's really interested in going to legal work instead of trafficking drugs, or does want to continue their education, or just needs some help with substance abuse. So these are our workers. Originally, the outreach workers have been with us the longest, about 4 years ago, I think now we've had interrupters. The interrupters were brought on later in response to feeling that we weren't getting to the hottest situations and conflicts. So the interrupters themselves, they have respective influential. So a lot of times they were higher in gang leadership than maybe the outreach workers were. They might have been a gang leader themselves. So they can talk to people at that level. It's kind of peer-to-peer network. They're more about monitoring the pulse within the community. So it's at the community level in one community, but also among all different communities, whether it's on the west side, the south side. And then they also mediate within and among groups. At least that was our initial idea, that they would be more of a broad mediators, whereas the outreach workers really build rapport with individuals, and they work in an individual target area. So they're not looking at the city or geographic areas as a whole, but rather the police beat that's their area. And they do more of this one-on-one time. They have to meet with their clients a certain amount of time, you know, per week, per month. And they do mediations as well. But initially we thought that this would be different than the violence interrupter mediations. So this is what mediations look like. As you can see, the map on the left is where the homicides are occurring. And what I really just want to point out on this is that the mediations on the far right there are happening in those areas. And you can see, based on the colors, it's kind of hard here, but that the frequency and the it's in the hottest spots. So that's what that looks like so far to date. All right, in terms of actual numbers of conflicts mediated, this is really interesting because, as you can see, in 2004, the interrupters The the interrupters were doing slightly more, and we thought that you can see throughout the course of this slide that we initially thought that that would be the case, but you'll see this year that there's a switch. And I think that this is really important because since 2005, the numbers of violence interrupters and outreach workers have pretty much remained stable. So that indicates that something else is happening. What we think is that this could be explained by the result of better recruitment of our workers on behalf of our staff, because originally the reason we hired the interrupters was because we thought they had closer ties, and we've really worked and recruiting outreach staff that also have close ties with gang affiliations and with the highest risk. And part of that came out of the development of criteria that further helped them define who their clients would be. And so we were making sure that we were hiring workers that could work with people that met four of these seven criteria, which has been shown to be the highest risk people who are most involved with shootings. How do I go back? There we go. Okay. So this chart here shows the percentage of documented conflicts that are gang-related. We track a number of different things, as Daniel showed. We track personal altercation, narcotics, domestic violence, child abuse, robbery, unknown, and other. I think this slide is interesting because you'll see that violence interrupters reported 70% of conflicts as gang-related versus 50% in 2000. What we think is that this difference here, because if you look at the first column versus the last one, that this might have happened because we expanded the categories. Originally, in our original documentation, there weren't as many categories. So we think that this attributes to that kind of drop. But the difference between 2004, which was 40%, and 2006, which is 69%, in outreach workers reporting gang-related conflicts, we think, again, is because we are doing a better job of recruiting the right people as outreach workers who are capable and connected with the highest risk, as well as better training on the documentation, and as well as, like I mentioned before, this development and implementation of the highest risk criteria. So I think initially our outreach workers were working with clients who were involved in, quote, you know, gang-related activities, as opposed to the clients that we were probably carrying in 2006 who were more heavily involved with gang-motivated activities. So I think that this really demonstrates that switch. So this is the percentage of documented conflicts involving a weapon. As you can see, the frequency of conflicts in mediated weapon, like 2004 was 15% difference, 2005 25.3%, and 2006 6%. We think that the difference between these two categories of workers could be an expression of the violence interrupters having a closer connection to the information about when violence is about to erupt or is erupting, based on their social networks, so that they might be closer to the actual situations where somebody is carrying a gun and is about to use it. And a lot of times they're just on their phone or they get calls and they're on the spot in a way sometimes that the outreach workers aren't. So I think that's what this chart probably suggests. This slide illustrates the potential retaliations prevented. This is an example of the back-end work done by both outreach workers and interrupters to prevent retaliations between groups and or individuals. This work is reactive, unlike a lot of the front-end work they do. I think that sometimes the communities think that ceasefire just shows up when somebody's been shot. But ideally, both groups of our workers are really trying to prevent it before there's ever a retaliation. But unfortunately, retaliations at this point are part of the reality. So the slight difference here between the outreach workers, which is higher in all three instances, might be related to the close relationships that outreach workers have with participants. That is, participants may be more inclined to reach out to an outreach worker to discuss situations and seek assistance with how to respond to a current or potential conflict, looking to the outreach worker for a way out or a way to save face, because sometimes they just need somebody to say to them, like, it's not the right thing to do. It's stupid. You're going to kill somebody, and look, you're going to go away for a very long time. So a lot of times they're having those discussions, which are encouraging people not to shoot, and I think that's what this is expressing here. (Clears throat) This slide illustrates the percentage of all conflicts mediated by interrupters and outreach workers that were thought to be likely or very likely to have led to a shooting. From 2004 and 2006, the percentage difference between the interrupters and the outreach workers about likeliness becomes closer. As you can see, by 2006, it goes from 10% to 8% to 1%. And we think that this might indicate, again, better recruitment of our workers, so they're working with the highest risk, as well as the refined criteria. So again, they're getting closer to the people that are most likely to shoot. So this is where I'm going to switch gears and look at the 2007 data that we have to date. This slide, again, just kind of reconfirms that we're gang-related or motivated activities are still the primary reason for conflict. So this mirrors trends from the earlier years. This gives you a more detailed breakdown than what we were looking at earlier, which again I think is some sense that we're working with the right population, at least with is our goal. So type of mediations. This slide illustrates the type of mediations that have occurred. A lot of times this happened on the phone, one-on-one, small group, group diplomacy, or third party. It's important to note that workers use more than any one, you know, as Daniel's example actually showed quite nicely. I think there's a lot of different methods that are used in any one mediation, so this doesn't really add up to 100%. But that said, we feel like this is an accurate representation of the frequency of each type of mediation. As you can see, violence interrupters reported significantly less one-on-one mediations, 48% than in 2006, which was 70%, whereas the outreach workers remained the same. This is kind of merits further inquiry. We don't know why this is. But I think what's most important about this presentation as a whole is that our staff originally hypothesized that the interrupters and outreach workers would be involved in different types of mediations based on their different job responsibilities. So we thought that the outreach workers would be mediating primarily one-on-one disputes and the interrupters would be engaged in small group mediations. And I think that this slide is exceptionally interesting because it challenges these assumptions. So, because as you can see, for small group mediations, it's only a 7% difference, and for the one-on-one, it's only 11. And I don't know that that's that significant. So mediation outcomes. I think this is interesting because there's not a comparative analysis here, but compared to 2006, there's a significant drop in the percentages of conflicts that were resolved either permanently. It went from 69% to 44, which is like 26% less success. Or temporarily, which went from 71% to 32%, which is 30% less success. This shift merits further investigation, but one possible hypothesis that we have come up with is that there might have been significant changes in the dynamics between the different groups, which made it more difficult to resolve conflicts. So these complexities might be better understood by looking at the data community by community to see if there was an all-out war in one or two of the areas. Again, this just kind of shows that the trends were about the same, and just in summary. So again, I think that what we've really seen between these two categories is that there weren't as many differences as we thought that there would be. Yes? Sure. Sure. We have a very very thorough recruitment kind of hiring process that includes paneling. And on the panels, not only community members, but law enforcement, as well as the executive director. We run background checks, and we do street checks. So our guys check on other guys to see if they're really out of the life. In order for somebody to work for us, we have to know that they've crossed that line and that they know that they have to be on this side of the line and be in the legal world in order to work with us. Our training is really significant. That's actually what I spend a lot of my time on lately these days. I was out in Baltimore recently helping with the training out there. And we have a very significant training, but I think what most people don't realize is, like, for instance, over 80% of our workers at any given time are former felons. So nobody generally wants to hire them, and people make assumptions about what their skill set are, which are usually very wrong. So you have to go back and actually start at the real beginning. So our training is a lot, it's experiential, it revolves around boundaries and scenarios, and has a whole bunch of different components that are very thorough to really speak to the lines that they're going to have to make certain decisions in their work, that they've changed, and how they're going to be able to work with their clients. So training is central, but I would argue that hiring the right people is the most important thing. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Actually, if there's time at the end, we'll come back. Okay, now I'm introducing Joseph L. Anest from the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control at CDC.